Well, 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 if it isn't Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of EE Journal's long-standing podcast, hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. Yes, this week we are talking about multi-core processing, the power of testing in avionics, and why we can't mitigate multi-core interference at the application level. Please welcome Richard Jenicke from Green Hill Software to talk about all of this and more. Check it out.
My guest today is Richard Jenicke from Green Hill Software. Thank you so much for joining me, Richard.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Okay, so first off, Richard, it seems like multi-core is everywhere except safety critical applications. Now, why do you think that is?
Well, multi-core has so many advantages in terms of performance and creating smaller systems because you can put more applications on a single processor. But the reason it's not in safety critical applications, or more specifically avionics, is because it's very hard to be 100% sure that the applications on different cores aren't going to interfere with each other. And flight safety certification authorities are understandably very conservative. So up to this point, it's been very hard.
Okay, so we're talking about achieving determinism today in the single core world. But how exactly do we do that?
Determinism is usually done by trying to make sure that the applications get separated. And we do that by partitioning in both space and time to make sure that they don't affect one another. So in space, that's memory space. So a CPU's MMU, memory management unit, takes care of giving each application its own address space so they don't interfere with each other. The time portion is that operating systems assign each application a time slot, and the length of that time slot is based upon that application's worst case execution time. And then once that time slot is done, they give it the time slot to the next application. So we know that each application has a fixed amount of time and it can't steal time from another application. And that's all part of, both of these partitioning mechanisms are part of a standard called ARINC 653, space and time partitioning.
Okay, so Richard, this is kind of a big question, but how do you think we can solve the safety issues we're talking about today on a software level, especially with these multi-layers of safety certification?
Yeah, so bringing that safety into the multi-core realm does require a good general solution at the operating system level. So multi-core products allow applications on different cores to be running at the same time. So they have contention for shared resources like shared memory or I/O or even shared cache. And when two of them or more of them are trying to go after the same resource, one of them isn't going to get there, and there's this contention. In order to make sure that somebody doesn't hog up all the memory bandwidth, which can happen when one application is doing writes and they get pipelined better than the reads do, you need to set some thresholds on how much bandwidth you're going to give to each application and enforce that at the operating system level, like a quality of service metric. And by doing that, by having this bandwidth allocation and then monitoring it, we actually call that BAM, you can solve it in a general way.
Okay, so let's talk about these requirements for safety certification. Now, I imagine that test suites for multi-core can be a rather big deal.
Yeah, so you can say you have an answer for it, but until you test and verify, it doesn't count for your certification. So the test suites are very important. And for multi-core in particular, they can be truly huge. In order to be able to test all the different combinations of interactions, because, you know, we didn't talk about it, but there's also DMA going on, and DMA can cause a lot of interference because you don't always predict it, what it's doing. You go and tell it to go do something and you forget about it. It's fire and forget.
Yeah.
So it's doing that while you're doing memory accesses and somebody else is doing I/O. You need test suites that work all of those together. We've found that the test suites can actually be up to 250 times larger in terms of lines of code than the actual operating system that you're testing.
Deterministic multicore is hard, but achievable, right? But almost impossible for system integrators to do themselves. Is that true?
That is true. Both takes deep knowledge of the processor to understand what the multicore interactions are, which they could do if they invest enough time in. But really, a lot of the solution has to happen inside of the operating system itself. So you can't really mitigate multicore interference at the application level unless you decide to do something drastic like only use one core. Then you're losing all the benefits of having a multicore solution. The other thing that you want is the flexibility to move applications around without having to retest the entire system. So if you do it in a way that you've isolated and proving these applications are independent, even when they're running on different cores, and you have the worst case scenarios with all your test suites, then anytime you change one application, you don't have to go back and retest and revalidate the entire system.
All right, Richard, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. I'm not sure I've asked you this before, so here we go. You have one last meal on planet Earth. That's it. That's all you're going to eat for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Wow. You know, it's funny, but one of my favorite meals ever since I was a kid was lamb. And I love, you know, grilled or roasted lamb chops with lots of garlic and rosemary, and partly because I also like a good red wine. And yes. And there's hardly any other food that goes even better right. with that, than except for maybe some really good veal stew. Maybe that should have been my answer.
Excellent. I love it. Well, Richard, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
It was great to be here. Thank you for all your insightful questions.
Speaking of avionics, this week's news you may have missed comes from one of the world's leaders in global aerospace, defense, and security designs, Lockheed Martin. For a company that specializes in really big stuff, you know, big helicopters and even bigger aircraft, this time they're going small. Really small. With a $10 million contract in their back pocket and a little help from the U.S. Army Research Laboratory, Lockheed Martin is working on a brand new project called the Self-Assembly of Nanostructures for Tunable Materials. And the ultimate goal of this project is to create new materials, especially for the defense optical technologies, made from, get this, the bioengineering of the DNA from single-cell organisms. Yes, really. Now, similar types of bioengineering have been around for a long time. Longer than I've been alive, actually. And the systems in place to make these microbes into tiny production centers already exists. For instance, Washington University in St. Louis have engineered bacteria to produce a kind of biosynthetic spider silk that actually performs just as well as the real stuff. So, this kind of bioengineering is practical today, but is it scalable? Especially for the defense market? Well, Lockheed Martin doesn't think so right now, but maybe it can be. So the first step for the Lockheed Martin Advanced Technology Center, with a little help from ARL, is to explore how they can improve these already existing bio designs and investigate how to scale up these technologies. So Lockheed is already looking at the possibility of one day producing telescopes that utilize a filter coating based on squid eyes and UV protection that uses molecules similar to the melanin found in animal and human skin. Okay, so we're jumping in right there, huh? Melissa Rhodes, senior research manager and Lockheed Martin lead for this project, puts it like this. Harnessing the power of self-assembling materials is sustainable, affordable, and can be much faster to produce than artificial methods. So yes, I think we're a ways away from telescopes using bioengineered melanin. But I do think this team at Lockheed Martin and that big old check will make a lot of bioengineered inroads that we probably haven't even considered yet. I can't wait to hear more about what this team comes up with. And if you want even more information about this study, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Now, whether you are working on a tiny bioengineered slice of DNA or a huge multi-core design, you are not going to be able to run away from your power supply needs. How does that saying go? All's fair in love and power? Something like that. So, power management for today's small form factor, cost-constrained, power-constrained devices can be a daunting design challenge, to say the least. Balancing BOM cost, PCB design area, and flexibility against other design parameters can be a headache for most engineering teams. Now, in a recent episode of Chalk Talk called Powering the Future, Always Aware SIMO PMICs, I sit down with a team from Maxim Integrated and chat all about Maxim's SIMO PMIX, which can make short work of those tough design problems. And you can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. You can also check out the Chalk Talk section of EE Journal. Can't miss it. It's right across the top. Or head on over to ye old YouTube. Keyword EE Journal. Also, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And don't forget, our Twitter handle is EEJournalTFM. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff. Shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. And one last thing before we go, today's episode would be completely amiss without a big old shout out to my little brother, whose birthday it is today. So, happy birthday, little brother. For the week of March 1st, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.